Rezaian's delivery. Oh. Goalkeeper was nervous. And it's forced home. Cali Dizia could well have scored the most famous goal in Iranian football history. And all the challenges and obstacles they've had in this tournament, they are so close to history. Oh, is he? Is he on?
Number four scored the goal from offside position. Final decision, offside.
Can you believe that? Utter, absolute heartache as the goal is ruled out.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast, World Cup 2026. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellum.
Hello.
At the end of the group stage, well, now the knockout stage has started. The first game in the round of 32, yes, 32. Now, that's exactly the same number as teams that were in the whole of the last tournament. Yep. The round of 32 has started yesterday with a zinger, didn't it, Terry? An absolute zinger. Got us right in the mood for knockout football, didn't it? I'm glad all those boring group games have gone and now it's just the hustle and bustle of knockout football. Gah! Cutthroat, isn't it?
It was cutthroat, mate. It really was. It was savage. It was savage. That no quarter asked nor given. Absolutely extraordinary. Two teams very much, I would say, at the top of their game, peak of their powers. Absolutely confident in what they were doing. It was just a privilege to even be watching it on the television. I thought, this is amazing. What a miracle football is.
Yeah, it wasn't what they were doing. It wasn't what they weren't doing. And they weren't falling into the traps being laid by their opponents, were they? At all. I know your game.
So you want to press, do you? Huh? You want to press? No, I don't want to press. You don't want to press? Are you sure you don't want to press? Because honestly, it would be helpful if you did press, because this is a bit embarrassing, because I'm just standing here with a ball doing nothing.
Yes, well, I suppose that's it, isn't it? That's it. It's if your tactics are relying on your opponents to actually do something, then your whole game plan can fall apart. Yeah, and they don't have to entertain, do they, these teams? It's all about winning, isn't it, at the end of the day, isn't it?
Well, it is. And I was reminded of something that Terry said a few weeks ago during the regular season, where he said, football coaches are under no obligation to entertain fans. They're there to win games.
Yes.
And he's right in that. But when I'm trying to enjoy a game of football, I'd really like to be entertained.
And for the record, I don't mean that. That was rubbish. It was dog poo. There are many, many ways of playing football.
Yes, there are.
And some are entertaining and great to watch. And others are more agricultural, more industrious, less entertaining to watch. And almost all of them are valid. In fact, all of them are valid. The only one that isn't valid is not playing football at all.
Well, let's hope that the rest of the knockout phase is going to be better than that one. And at least it didn't go to extra time. At least we were spared that as well.
Yeah, so God, yes.
We could all go to bed relieved after that one.
That was genuinely funny, though, wasn't it? It's like you're thinking, my God, thank God they've scored. Because we all know what it's like, don't we, listeners? I mean, when you're that invested, you've said, I've sat here for 89 minutes. There's no way I'm not watching the extra time, even though I know it's going to be painful and miserable and I'm going to have to wait for penalties. I have given so much of myself to this, I have no choice. And then up there popped and that man is a hero, absolute hero.
A hero of our time. He deserves some kind of medal, he really does. But hey, we're not going to be talking about the knockout stage because there's only been one game so far. We can look ahead to the knockout stage, but We're going to be talking about the last knockings of the group stage here, about all the teams that went out, all 16 of them, and about what this says about this World Cup. So let's start on, well, Jan's first pick out of the bag when he said who was not going to win the World Cup in the preview. Now, it was quite a ballsy choice. I've had people talk to me and said, so Jan doesn't like making friends, does he? He actually selected both England and Scotland in his picks for who's not going to win the World Cup. And I agreed with him. I said, yes, that's pretty much him all over. So, your first pick, Jan, was Scotland. And yes, they went out. They went out again for the fourth time on goal difference. Fourth time they've gone out of the World Cup at the group stage on goal difference. They go out at the group stage every time they've been in there. But this is the fourth time that it's been on goal difference. So I guess we shouldn't really be surprised, should we, Jan?
Not really. I mean, I picked them first for entertainment value, because I realise there is an onus on me to provide entertainment if you're going to...
Yes, there is. Yes.
Well, there actually is, unlike being a football coach. But the question that was put to me is, who's not going to win the World Cup? And Scotland clearly aren't going to win the World Cup, and that should surprise no one. But the manner in which they went about it was pretty poor. I think everyone, and not just the football-watching public, but their amazing fans, went all that way. Had a great old party. And I get the feeling that they just went for the party. Because if they were there for the football, well.
Yeah.
Think again. But, it was pretty poor. And I thought that the way that they went out, I mean, they were going out anyway, but they needed just a point, the commentator was saying, at the opening knockings of the Brazil game, just as they thought they could pass the ball and out-jinx Vinicius Jr., who happens to be one of the best players on the planet.
Yeah, he does.
He is one of the best players on the planet. And the Scottish defence thought that it was a good idea to try and pass out with him and take the extra touch with him bearing down on you. I mean, I felt sorry for the defender, but I mean, it was a ridiculous decision he made and embarrassed them. Then they were fortunate, weren't they, a few minutes later that the same thing kind of happened again and that was ruled out. And then they failed to clear for number two. And then the last one, they were just destroyed. It would have destroyed anyone. And it's culminated, of course, in Steve Clarke falling on his claymore and deciding to go and do other things. Yeah, a pretty dour performance. Is it reflective of Steve Clarke and his personality? It just didn't seem very exciting or full of any kind of vigour in his press conferences, and some people aren't the most entertaining people to talk to, but he's in charge of a passionate nation's hopes and desires, the biggest stage that there is in football, and he really didn't get them to deliver. The side's not chock full of world-class talent, we know that, but they have got some real talent in that team, and not to see something better from McTominay was rubbish. McGinn was all right, I suppose, in the early game, probably the only one. But they've got players that could have had a better game against Haiti, which was terrible, although they got the win and could have probably done something with Morocco, possibly, but just didn't really turn up on the day. And then obviously they just fell apart at the end. So, not happy. It doesn't fill my heart to be saying these things, because I would genuinely like to have seen Scotland do well. But unfortunately, they didn't. And I was right. That's all the maths.
Well, yes, you certainly were right. Terry, so the Scottish Southgate is gone, isn't he? Does that mean that they're going to get someone interesting in his place? Someone who's going to get the best out of them? Because they had such an exciting qualification, didn't they? That win against Denmark was just fantastic, wasn't it? And we all enjoyed that. And I think that was it, that overhead kick from McTominay sort of gave you some idea that you were expecting something else from this side. But really, they just did what every Scotland side has ever done.
They played a slightly less talented version of England, to be perfectly honest with you. I mean, at least England in the last two games. They were disappointing. You're right, they've shown a great deal of cojones in their qualifying, and to get through against a team like Denmark and to turn up in the way that they did. And I was expecting a bit more fight from them. I don't think it's the fact that they went out so much. It is the manner of it, though. It seems to be contrary to what we have seen Scotland do in this qualifying group. I would have expected them to have scored more goals, bluntly.
Yeah.
I mean, they were disappointing against Haiti. They should have scored at least two, maybe three goals against Haiti. They were worth a goal or two against Morocco. And I know Morocco are a good side. And I know objectively you look at that and then you look at the rankings of those two respective teams and you say, well, actually, you know what? Morocco objectively are a better side than Scotland. But it was only 1-0. And you just think, well, that feels better. And then by the time you get to Brazil, yeah, again, objectively a game that you would expect to lose. But when you've got your first two games, you know, are in, you know, from the rankings point of view, you've got the lowest ranked team, the next lowest ranked team, and then you've got the, then you've got Brazil, and then you've got the opportunity to have all of your work done by the time you get humped by Brazil. And then when to turn up there and then gift them the result is just unforgivable. It's unforgivable. And it's no wonder that Steve Clarke left, actually. And I mean, I remember, you know, those interviews, those post-match interviews, and he looked so crestfallen. And he wasn't even prepared to think that they might survive. And you might expect a leader in a moment like that to try and be a little bit more upbeat. On reflection, you know, I suspect, yeah, he's just made his decision. Steve Clarke has done an amazing job at Scotland, and this is a lousy way for it to go. This is not the best way for it to go. He deserves better. You know, we call him the Scottish Southgate, but there's no knighthood waiting for Steve Clarke. And rightly so. No one will be writing a play about Steve Clarke, right? That's not happening. That's not going to happen.
Oh, really? I mean, I quite like to watch Dear Scotland. I think that might be quite...
Okay, fine. Kafka died years ago. It's never going to happen.
Fine. You've twisted my arm, guys. I'll do it, all right? I'll do it. But it won't be very good. More broadly, I think that's... There's this kind of perception of Scottish coaches that they have to be a bit dour. And that there are so many different characteristics, so many different parts of the Scottish character that are not dour. So why does everybody have to be like Matt Busby? I mean, like, just, you know, maybe someone who's, I don't know, maybe prepared to inject a bit of enthusiasm, and maybe someone who isn't Scottish. And I sit next to a Scotsman at work, and a passionate Scotsman and a passionate Scottish supporter. He's also a Celtic fan, lads. He's also a Celtic fan. So I said to him, well, you know, who do you fancy for the job? And he went, oh, mate. Now you're asking, mate.
Oh.
So, yeah, he's very much a big fan of Big Ange. Says, yeah, he knows the Scottish game.
Yeah.
He's an experienced international coach. He's taken an international team to the World Cup. And he's unemployed.
Well, no, he's not. He's a pundit on ITV. I mean,
sorry. Yeah. Sorry. All right, fine. He doesn't have salaried employment right now. So I wonder whether or not that's... This is obviously, I think, a conversation for another time.
There's been a goal at Houston.
Goal at Houston, and it's gone to Japan. Whoa, shot from outside the area. I can't see who did it.
See, this Japan looked good. This Brazil side looked mid-table Premier League. So that's what I'm saying. They did well in that group, but... yeah, people were saying about Scotland were in a tough group, very, very tough group. And yes, they had two teams that ranked in the top 10. But I don't know if this Brazil side is as good as people are saying. They're playing Lucas Paqueta. I mean, like, West Ham improved when they got rid of Lucas Paqueta. They really did.
Yeah, they did.
They almost escaped relegation because they got rid of Lucas Paqueta.
Yeah, I mean, this is the Brazil side that, you know, they started the World Cup with a Brentford striker up front. You know, you talk about mid-table. Yeah, that's what I assume. Well, it's a bit unkind to Brentford, actually, but nevertheless. Yeah, anyway, so just to return to the point, Scotland, yeah, massively disappointed. Bringing a big character, I think, to come in and galvanise that team. The Euros are in the UK, of course, so there's pressure on the position because I don't think we automatically qualify, do we, the British teams? So you don't want to be able to, you want to be able to make it, you're sure you turn up for your own party.
Mm. Yes.
So it's tricky. It's tricky. And maybe Steve Clarke just thought, you know what? I don't want to go through that again.
He's been there since 2019, hasn't he? So he's done a stint.
It's a good stint. Yeah.
And he's got to the World Cup and didn't make it happen. So I think you can say he gave it a shot and just didn't achieve. But given the history, as you said, Graham, was he ever going to achieve? But then again, you know, you've got to back yourself if you're a professional coach. He gave them some hope, which is brilliant. I thought you were going to say, before you said you're talking about Big Ange, I thought you were going to say something massively patronising like, They need to get an Englishman in there, don't they, to sort it out.
I'd never say something like that.
Neither would I.
Not with the microphones hot, anyway.
Neither would I.
See, I think Steve Clarke would have done a lot better if he'd had a tartan waistcoat. I think a tartan waistcoat would have done him really well, actually. I think that might have been the thing that he needed, the focal point. But, well, it's easy to say that now. But maybe we can get one for Big Ange. I mean, I think he'd look great in a tartan waistcoat.
Yeah, he'd look amazing. That would be great.
Oh, they should go completely left field and get Bielsa in. Go on, get Bielsa. Go on, he's not got a job now. Please get him before he's tempted back to the Premier League again.
It's a wonderful idea, but at the same time, it's a terrible idea.
But it's an entertaining idea.
Yeah, and of course, as we know, football is about entertainment.
It is indeed. Well, let's talk a bit more about the other teams that did get through from the group stage. And really, there weren't that many surprises. I think out of the lowest ranked teams in the world, Cape Verde obviously shone as a team that got through with three draws, just did what they needed to do. They've turned up and they've entertained as well. But the whole of the continent of Africa did very well, because of the 10 teams that started, nine of them are still there. And on percentage terms, that is the most successful confederation. 90% of the teams that were entered all got through. Okay, one more's gone out. South Africa went out yesterday, so it's only 80% there now. But hey, that's who got to the knockout stage. Good times for African football, you might say, but long-time listeners will know the problems with CAF that are going on right now. So maybe not so great for the confederation itself. But the World Cup is better for them doing well. Asian Confederation not done so well, only two teams, and one of them isn't even in Asia. Yeah, Australia and Japan, the only two sides to come throughout the Asian Confederation. Hardly surprising when Qatar and Saudi are pretty much ushered through without too much effort, taking up two slots. And when, of course, Iran are, of course, treated like cattle. Terry, it was heartbreaking how they went out in the end, wasn't it?
Yeah, it really was. I think it's complete. You can't understate, I think, just how appalling Iran players and coaches have been treated. I mean, that is, their support staff have been denied access. They were given limited time in the United States with which to prepare and play and to come back. No opportunity for recovery. Having to train in Mexico, cross the border, and then come back again. There is no justification for it. I mean, even if you are team US and like you say, well, you know, they are an enemy and, you know, they have to be treated. Take whatever security precautions you might feel you need to do. But, you know, ultimately, you still have to afford them the courtesy as hosts of a participating nation. And they deserved that. And they were entitled to that as well, frankly. And I think that it is appalling. I mean, I don't want to get into the politics of it. I mean, Iran is not a nice place, I would imagine, and is run by not very nice people. They're not the only country like that. And I would have thought, in view of the broader political scope at the moment, that there would have been some room to say, well, look, maybe the diplomatic thing to do here is to afford these guys the same courtesy that we afford the rest of the participants. And when you consider, therefore, what they were then up against, it's extraordinary that they got as far as they did. And really, by rights, they should have qualified, because I have to say, I mean, unless there are differing views here, I am struggling to justify or rationalise the decision that was taken to cancel that goal at the end of the game. I mean, I don't get how, I mean, I do get it, and I don't want to turn it into a VAR rant, but, you know, the goal was given onside on the field. And it was, according to the computer-generated cartoon man, it was a toe offside. That's not offside. There's no advantage to be gained by being a toe offside, apart from anything else. But if the linesman has given the goal, you know, for me, that goal should really be allowed to stand. I'm not suggesting political interference or anything juvenile like that. But I mean, I suspect the reaction would be different if it happened like that to a bigger nation or a more respected nation, I would suggest to you. I just think it just felt really lousy and really grubby. And I think, you know, politically a bit of an own goal as well. And so it is a shame that, you know, I think that they would have been deserving final 32ists.
I think it would have been great if they'd made it through, but I think that is my let's put one on the regime in Washington rather than me thinking I'd like to see Iran do well because, you know, they're not my team. But I echo your point, though, Terry. They were dealt with awfully and treated like absolute animals, which isn't in the spirit of what the World Cup's supposed to be about. And Infantino's response to quite a good question that was put to him, very long question, which I won't go into, but the upshot of it was, you know, are you not embarrassed by how some of these teams, most notably Iran's, been treated? And his view was, well, you know, the Women's World Cup's coming up in England and, in a few years' time. He said, do you think that we should be dictating as a governing body what the British government does in terms of their laws and rules on who can come into the country? Which my answer is, well, yes, you've been awarded this tournament. You need to host it and deal with it in the spirit in which it was awarded to you. And they failed to do that with Iran, which was disgusting. But I do think that the goal was offside. I didn't at the time, like everybody else on VAR. If I think any thinking person would have wanted Iran to go through for reasons that I've already said. But it's unfortunate, but it would have been a fairy tale, but, you know, ultimately.
As far as the decision is concerned, if you're going to spend millions on a system that you require every player to be body scanned for, then of course it's going to go down to toenails. That's the whole nature of the system. There's no fuzzy lines on this one. What's the point of scanning all these players and having 3D avatars of them all if you're going to say, oh, well, it's sort of onside? It does make you question what the nature of offside is. What's the philosophy of offside? Why are we drawing a line there? I suppose really the line of offside is like a moving painted line, isn't it? It's like anything, like the goal line or the penalty line. But even so, it's difficult enough for a striker. If he thinks he's level, how does he know he's level? He doesn't know he's level. So the rules should be written out, the fact that you can't be level anymore. You can't know that you're level. You can't even get a feel that you're level. So it's just ridiculous.
Well, surely the philosophy behind the offside is to prevent an unfair advantage.
Yeah.
So is there an unfair advantage for one of your toes to be in an offside position? And I guess that's a question that perhaps needs to be asked. And then maybe I would say no.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, because this is the root of the Wenger change, isn't it? Where it's got to be, if any part of you is level with the last defender, then you're onside. But that just moves the goalpost. It gives the attacker player an advantage. It returns the advantage you had before of being level, because now if you are level with the defender, like the Iranian attacker was, it's really just 50-50 whether or not you're level or not. It's a guess. At least now, if you push forward, you're taking that risk yourself.
I don't think that solves the problem. I think it just moves the problem. You just, because if you're one stride ahead with your heel, with your heel on the, you've just got the same issue but in reverse.
Yeah, but so. I think at least if you are that far ahead, you're taking that risk yourself. It's not like being shoulder to shoulder with the defender and thinking, I don't know if I'm onside or not. At least if you're pushing forward, then that's up to you. You've taken that choice to go forward. So I think that's why, for me anyway, that's why I'm warming to that. But only because we've been backed into this corner by VAR, by the fact that we are body scanning players so that we can make decisions. Not body scanning as in the lino just looking at them and seeing whether they're level or not. It's, taking them to some place like an airport and having their whole body scanned and making 3D avatars of them. I'm sure this is not the way the game is meant to be played. But hey, who knows? Who knows? Maybe VO will come up with a new device for it to happen at all levels, like, you know, park football and things like that. I did think about the way that Iran were treated, and I wonder how much of it. I mean, obviously, there is the war between USA and Iran. But I do wonder how much of the narrative around how the team were treated was informed by what happened at the Women's Asian Cup earlier on this year, when pretty much almost the entire team defected in Australia. I just wonder if there's been anything to do with that that made the USA think, well, we wouldn't actually accept these players if they decided to defect. I don't think that would have happened here. There was completely different circumstances going on there. But I wonder if that incident had anything to do with or made what we saw even worse than it was. It is hard on Iran because they are ranked a lot higher than going out of this stage. And really just hope that Team Melli are around for the next World Cup and actually get to show what they can do. Let's talk about England, because England did get through. England get through top of their group. Everything in the garden is rosy, isn't it? We're all very positive, aren't we, Jan?
Well, you come to the least patriotic man in the room to talk about England. Yes, everything's rosy in the garden. Of course it is, except the bits that aren't. My takeaway from the group stages with England, which will probably surprise, in fact, will surprise no one, is that the same questions that came up in the Croatia game about their defensive frailties, I think it's probably a fair way of putting it, didn't go away by the time they walked off as victors against Panama, because it still looked like they can be caught and probably by if they played better sides, and I know that you don't do that in the group stages, but if they played a side that can really break away, then I think they will struggle. My other takeaway is that, and this was really obvious during the Ghana game, that Ghana, by the way, played an absolute blinder in that.
Yeah.
They executed their game plan absolutely perfectly. And while it was frustrating to watch, I mean, you have to hand it to them that they completely nullified England and they had no ideas whatsoever about how to get around them. And I think that's the second big thing. They thought they could play around such a compact and deep set side and couldn't work out how to do it. And it wasn't until maybe the last 10 minutes they actually put a cross in to try and create a bit of jeopardy, to try to create a bit of chaos. When before that, they were just trying to create this perfect goal from multiple passes, forming these little triangles, which would be wonderful if it came off, but it was never, ever going to. They could still be playing that game now, and that approach would not have yielded any results. So I thought that showed that England needs to really think about what they can do to have a bit more diversity in their approach to breaking down opponents. It was a little bit more encouraging in the Panama game. I thought Rashford looked alive. He did look alive as well when he came on against Ghana. He's doing all right, and hopefully he'll continue to grow into it. There were obviously positives to be taken from the Panama game, but was it that convincing? Got the job done? How many tournaments have we been through with Southgate where he got the job done and it was uninspiring? And I thought that we kind of changed that, and it doesn't feel like they have. And I hope that they do, and I hope they just go for it against Congo, who will be fueled, no doubt, on Mbongo.
Which is naturally. Naturally.
If the advert breaks aren't sponsored by Mbongo in the stadium, I will switch off.
Yes, yes. And so you should. So you should.
Of course.
So you should. Terry, yeah, they've struggled to break down teams that are organised in their defence. DR Congo got through by being organised in their defence. And if they get past DR Congo, they may have to face Ecuador, who have been extremely effective in their defence, or the host Mexico. It's actually going to be a tough couple of knockout rounds if England have any chance of getting to the quarterfinal, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, for a lot of people in England, that last game may actually be the last game that they end up seeing, because the next game's on at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, where a lot of people will still be in the office and then travelling home. And then if they make it past there, the other one is on at 1 o'clock on a Tuesday morning, a Monday night, and people won't actually get the opportunity to stay up and watch that game. So this could genuinely be it for them. I won't speak too much for the defensive concerns. I understand that people are concerned about defences, but I think in short format tournaments like this, for me, it really is more about how coordinated you are in attacks. I mean, to a certain degree, for England, it's got to be about scoring the goals. When you look at teams that are compact defensively, they're making a huge amount of sacrifices in terms of attacking football in order to be effective. And teams like England can't afford to do that. English public won't stand for it,
yeah,
for one. And for two, they've got really, really good attacking players. It's just completely out of the question. So with all of that said, they have difficulty with players who have trouble getting past other players. I think Saka and Rashford can do that. I think if we start again like we did against Panama, against Saka and Rashford, then I think eventually that will take hold and we'll do that. But when we played against Ghana, I mean, like, there's a lot of qualities about Madueke and Gordon. They're both fine, fine players, but they are quite tactically disciplined players. I mean, they're not necessarily as imaginative as I think as Saka and Rashford are. And that's not to suggest that those two are not tactically disciplined, but that is to suggest that I think that they're capable of doing something a little bit extra to be able to get past determined defences. Saka made a virtue of it for most of last season, for example.
He did, indeed, yes.
And indeed, Rashford playing for Barcelona, because, like, let's face it, most teams play Barcelona with a low block. So I think that for me, it makes sense. And I was heartened by the fact that at the very least, they started with those two guys. I think that is probably the correct strat in a situation like that. But it's depressing, because after the Croatia game, you kind of felt pleased about it. When Graham, you and I spoke about it last week, and we said rarely have we seen England have a poor first half, but then come out in the second half improved, and that's just not something that England usually not versatile enough to be able to do that. And that's not actually happened against Croatia. They played an absolute blind. It was really, really good. But this time around, yeah, it was a real, real slog. But I do think it is important that not enough is done to acknowledge Ghana's achievement there, because that really was almost the perfect game.
Yeah.
The only way it wasn't perfect was that they didn't nick a goal at the end. Because, that would have been great. And yeah, I mean, it worries me, because, I mean, I do think we'll probably find a way past DR Congo, but Ecuador and Mexico, if we've got to go to Mexico and get something, that is going to be really tough. And yeah, I know Ecuador had a really, really difficult group stage, but they qualified second. They got probably one of the best defences in the world, maybe. Blimey, O'Reilly. I mean, that is going to be a nutritional football match, and I wouldn't like to say how that's going to go at all. So it doesn't look good for England, I have to say.
No.
And I think it's important we reconcile ourselves to that.
Yeah, I think if England are to get to the quarterfinals, it is going to be a tough watch. That's all I'd say. I don't think you're going to see the free-flowing attacking football that you saw in the second half against Croatia again in this tournament, I don't think. Unless we luck out in the quarterfinals, maybe if we're lucky enough to get Brazil or Japan, or maybe even Norway, in the quarterfinal, then maybe you might see that attacking play against a team that will come out and try and attack. But they'll come out and try and attack because they're really good, and they've got past some really, really good teams as well. So England's passage through this knockout stage is not easy, and it's going to be difficult. I'd love to say that Colombia-Ghana is going to be a great game. It's going to be a very intriguing game, but I think that's going to be a tough watch, because I think Colombia will try everything to break down Ghana, and I just don't know how that's going to go.
They're going to fail.
They are going to fail.
Well, that's Ghana going to win that game. I watched the Colombia-Portugal game, a brilliant game of football, one of those great, great classic nil-nils. Really, really good game. But I mean, at the same time, yeah, I think that Colombia are just going to be banging on that door, and Ghana are just not going to let those guys in at all. And it's going to be really emotional, because obviously it's not my team, so we'll be able to enjoy it from a completely different perspective. But I think Colombia are only going through that game on penalties.
Well, Terry, you can settle down and enjoy that, because neither Colombia or Ghana were your picks in our elimination episode in our preview podcast. And you lead the table on our selections. You've only managed to pick up 13 points, whereas Jan and I aren't doing so well. I'm on 41 points, and Jan, you're on 60 points. But the good news is that half of your teams are out already, so they won't be getting any points. And only three of Terry's teams have gone out, so he's got lots of points to come, including Cape Verde, who, as they progress further in the tournament, well, they won't probably get past Argentina, but even so, lose to Argentina, that's going to be a 23-point hit for Terry there. Yeah, I'm keeping the listeners up to date on Blue Sky with that, and putting up tables, showing what's going to happen. I don't think we did a bad job on selecting the teams that were going to go out there. We said Ghana would go deep, even though they were the fourth lowest ranked team in the tournament. I took a big hit on Uruguay. Yeah, okay, that was a big 28-point hit for me. South Korea, I think that was a surprise for everyone, really. But I think other than that, we've done very, very, very well. Well, listeners, we're going to go and watch the second half of Brazil-Japan, see if Brazil can get into it with their mid-table Premier League side, or see what Japan have got to offer, whether they're just used to playing against 100 school kids, whether that really does help when you go up against a team like Brazil. But who knows? Looking forward to the second half. Let's hope it's a good one. But that is all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, and from Terry DeVellin, it's goodbye.
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 Get in touch with us on Blue Sky or Instagram, where we are at Sound of Football, or go to sofpodcast.com. Like us, share us, rate us, and review us. Do it now!
Scribble, scribble, tick, tick, tick.